We want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries. Right now, let's get to Pastor Terry's insightful message.
And once again, good morning. I'm returning to my project to one day have preached through all the Psalms. I am now on Psalm number 80, which leaves me with about 60 Psalms to go. And I realize that I'm rapidly running out of time in which to get this done, but I try every once in a while to return for an installment on the Psalms. A few things in terms of housekeeping on Psalm 80. It is one of a pretty good number of Psalms written not by David, or the few written by Solomon, or by Moses, the 90th Psalm, or any of these other characters. It is a Psalm of Asaph. Now, a word about that. There was more than one guy who called himself Asaph. The original Asaph was in the time of David. David appointed this man to be what you and I would call a worship minister. It was his job to write psalms, to arrange the music for the psalms, and to lead the Israelites in their worship services in the singing of the psalms. This was what Asaph did. As time passed along, there were guys who called themselves Asaph, but it became more of a position. Some of them may have been descendants of the original Asaph, some of them not, but they would still sign it a Psalm of Asaph because it was a psalm created by the worship leader for the congregation. I believe Psalm 80 to be one of these later compositions because it is looking back on the days of the Davidic kingdom, when the kingdom went from the Mediterranean to the Euphrates and was broad and expansive and powerful. Looking back on that as the time passed, remembered fondly in days that have apparently become less happy and prosperous. So there's one thing. Second, if you read the heading, the psalm is played according to the testimony of the lilies, which is a beautiful sounding title. And there's just a little handful of psalms that are to be played and sang according to the testimony of the lilies. There's two competing theories about what that means. Some people think that it means that it was kind of a slow melodic composition. I have come to think that the second group is right, that the six-stringed harp was called the lily harp because lilies have six petals and because the edges of the harp were flared out. And so it is accompanied on the six-string harp, the testimony of the lilies, if that makes any difference to you. One other thing, there is the reference to God being seated. I don't think Twitter was going yet at that time. But on the other hand, I'm sure Twitter came as no surprise to God when it did. But God being seated between the seraphim, he's talking about that place on top of the Ark of the Covenant. There were golden statues of seraphim on the lid, and the wings all most touched in that little space between the tips of the wings of the cherubim was the mercy seat, the place, that special place in the Holy of Holies where God's presence sat. Now, people have asked me why you would call the little empty space between the tips of the cherubim's wing a seat. It is because if you go back to the visions that Ezekiel and Isaiah had, or John in the New Testament, when these men were granted a glimpse of God on his throne, the throne was always surrounded by the four cherubim, and sometimes carried about by the four cherubim, but always surrounded by the four cherubim. So the throne of God is always seen in these visions in the midst of the cherubim. And since the idea was that God would be specially enthroned in the Holy of Holies, it was that seat spot between the wings of the cherubim where his special presence was thought to be seated. Now, I bring that up because it seems to Asaph that God has maybe vacated the mercy seat. Things have turned sour for the kingdom of Israel. The prosperity of old is gone. The glory of bygone days is bygone with those days. Nothing is going right. And the psalm is an appeal to God on this matter. And it begins with Asaph making sure that God is listening. I'm real familiar with this because Michael knows that I'm not the world's greatest listener on all occasions. And sometimes she has to say, I need to make sure you're hearing me right now. Are you hearing me right now? Yes, I'm hearing you. Have you been in those conversations? Some of it isn't important, but you come to one point where you have to take somebody by the hand and you look, I want you to hear what I say because this is important. And Asaph wants to be sure that as we all sing this song, God, please listen. Hear us. We know that you're angry with us. You got a pretty good notion why. But how long? How long? Will your anger burn against us forever? We eat sorrow. We drink tears. We are objects of ridicule to our national neighbors. We're failures in all our current endeavors. Everything is falling apart. Won't you restore us? Won't you let your face shine upon us again? Because if your face will shine upon us again, we will be saved. This is the burden of the 80th Psalm. Now, when Asaph said saved, he didn't mean exactly what you and I mean by being saved. Through most of the Testament, saved referred to the national fortunes of the nation of Israel. They were saved out of slavery in Egypt and planted in the Promised Land. They were saved out of Philistine or Midianite or other oppressions and restored again to their freedom. Saved, they argued among themselves a little bit if there was such a thing as life after death. And by the, you know, David kind of thought there was, Solomon kind of thought there probably wasn't. And that became enshrined in two religious parties which still held sway when Jesus came. The Pharisees thought there was a life after death and a resurrection from the dead. And the Sadducees were equally certain that there was no such thing. But they were still arguing all about that until, as far as I'm concerned, Jesus settled the issue for all time. Because Jesus says there is, and that He's coming to get us and to accompany us into that world to come. But they weren't sure about that. So saved for them was a national thing. Restore the fortunes of the nations. Now, I think it's interesting that as Asaph continues this plea, he wants God to remember certain things. Remember! And my first thought is, you think God forgets? Think God forgot anything? But he wants, remember. Can't you remember, God? Don't you remember? how you saved us in Egypt. I mean, the plagues and the pounding down of Pharaoh's stubborn will and the parting of the sea and the raising up of the cloud of smoke and fire and the manna in the wilderness and the purifying of the waters. And don't you remember, God, can't you remember how you used always to save us? Don't you remember, God? Don't you remember when you planted us in the promised land, how you knocked down the walls of Jericho and caused the enemy to flee before us and sent the hornet to discomfit our foes and sent the storms to mire down the chariots of our enemies and oppressors? Can't you remember, God, how you used always to save us and do a little bit? Don't you remember, God? Don't you remember that Davidic kingdom when we stretched from the shores of the Mediterranean to the banks of the Euphrates and you made us prosperous and everybody respected us and it was all great and glorious? Can't you remember, God, how you used always to save us and do a little bit of that again? Now, if I were God, and I'm not, if I were speaking for God to this situation, I might ask the people offering this prayer also to remember a few things. Do you remember how many of you I had to kill to get you out of Egypt? I mean, do you remember that grumbling rebellion where you would have ground the whole thing to a halt and I had to cause the earth to open up and swallow a number of you to get you to move on? Do you remember that incident with the golden calf there at the foot of Mount Sinai when I was handing down the law to Moses and you were worshiping the gods of Egypt down there on the plain? Do you remember these things? Yes, I knocked down the walls of Jericho to bring you into the promised land. I remember that very well. Do you remember the second battle where I had to deal with that man, Achan, because he was taking and hiding plunder that I specifically said should be left alone? Do you remember that? The Davidic kingdom, do you remember? Do you remember how many people I took with pestilence in just a couple of days to get you and David back on track because you were just getting so out of control? Do you remember all that about these times? Try remembering those things and take a clue. And here is the clue. I have always told you, worship me only and walk in my ways, and I will bless you. So change your ways. Change your ways. Change your stubborn, stiff-necked, sinful ways, and I will bless you. Well, here is the rub, because what Asaph seems to be saying, particularly if you scoot down there to verses 17, 18, 19, the very tail end of the psalm, Asaph seems to be saying, bless us and we will change our ways. God says, change your ways and I will bless you. And Asaph says, well, bless us and we will change our ways. I promise, we will. You know, it's like, I'll gladly pay you that money I owe you, Bill, if you will lend it to me again first. There's a problem with the sequencing, right? Well, there is a little mitigation to what Asaph is asking for. Again, if you look at the tail end, and there's a little argument about interpretation here. Asaph is asking for God to raise up the man or the son. It depends, and in Hebrew it's hard to know how you interpret this word anyway, but the man or the son of his right hand. And in verse 16, it seems pretty plain that the son is the nation of Israel. But there's some disagreement about what it means as you move to the last couple of verses. And I'm going to go with the people who take the alternate view, and some of the older versions reflect this view. And he says, raise up the man of your right hand. That Asaph is asking God for a new leader. We're lost. We're wandering in the wilderness. And if you will just send us the right leader, we will follow him and be saved. If you will just send us another prophet like Moses, we will follow him and be saved. If only you will send us another leader like Joshua, we'll follow him and we'll be saved. Give us another king like David, and it can be like the days of David again, because we will follow that man and we will be saved. Just stir up your right-hand man, O God. Send us a deliverer. And when he shows up, we'll be ready. And we'll walk the way right behind him. Send us that man to lead us out of the mire. And we will follow him to solid ground. Asaph may have been asking for more than he knew, or maybe not. You can decide for yourself. But when you ask for a king like David, well, God made some interesting promises about a king like David to come. When you ask for a prophet like Moses, God made some interesting promises about a prophet like Moses who would come. It may be that Asaph is just wanting a new king, a new ordinary human being who will be stirred up by God and be like David was, like Moses was, or it may be that Asaph is asking for the Messiah. And I will be quick to say that in the minds of many of the Jews of the Old Testament period, they would not have drawn a distinction between those two propositions. They pictured the Messiah as just another human being who would come and do human things like David and Moses did human things, only stirred up and supported by God. But whatever Asaph was asking for, and again, allowing that you follow the second interpretation as I do rather than the first, we want a new leader to get us out of this mess we have created for ourselves. Well, I will go back to my previous thought, and if I were speaking for God, I would say, I sent you Moses, and do you remember how you wanted to kill him and go back to Egypt? And I sent you David, and do you remember how you wanted to pitch him off the throne in favor of his ne'er-do-well son, Absalom, and send things right back to the way they were before I called my servant David? Do you remember those things? If I sent you a leader, you'd follow him? Really? And when in the fullness of time, God sent the true Son of His right hand. The cry was, crucify Him. Crucify Him. Asaph said, we'll follow this guy and the nation will be saved. The high priest under which Jesus arrived said, better that this man should die than that the nation should perish. Totally, totally missing what God was endeavoring to give them. I'm not trying to be anti-Asaph or anti-Semitic or anti any group of people or any individual, because I don't think we're any different. Oh, if only God would show us the way, we would walk in it. Well, I didn't mean that way. That's not what I had in mind. If only Jesus Christ had come in our day instead of to those backward folks of the first century, we'd done better. Would we? Would we? I kind of doubt it. You know, God has raised up other men, other women, other leaders for our good. And if we bemoan the leadership that we have now as insufficient to the crisis of the day, I don't usually do politics from the sermon. This has been long enough now, I think I can say this. In 2016, during the campaigns for president, when it was got down to being between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, my primary thought was this: okay, the joke's not funny anymore. When are the real candidates coming? If we bemoan our present leadership as insufficient for the crisis of the day, I want you to know that we have earned the leadership that we have. We have earned it completely by refusing to follow better. Stepping aside from politics and who you might think is better for a moment, let me tell you this. Asaph had this much right at the core. He knew who the shepherd of Israel was. It was God. He knew who the vine dresser was who had planted that vine in Canaan and caused it to flourish. That was God. And he knew who was the true father of his children, the chosen people. That was also God. However mistaken he may have been about the resolve of the nation to follow the right leader, he knew who God was to Israel. And it is always true. Nothing has changed. Follow him and you will be saved. And saved so much more than the salvation that Asaph was picturing. Follow him. Follow the Son of his right hand, whom he has sent to show us the way out of the swamp, out of the mire, out of the wilderness. Follow him and you will be saved. I cannot speak for the nation. There are many days when I kind of feel like I've lost hope for the nation and for all nations in the world as it is constituted. I haven't lost hope for you or for myself. If we will follow Him, Son of God's right hand, we will be saved.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.